You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Today's story may be disturbing to some listeners, so please use discretion.
He bought all his family new clothes, bought toys for the children, and they went to a photographer's studio and had a group portrait made, which would have been a really big deal in those days. Many families would never have had a photograph of themselves, and just getting everyone together and bring them into town, you know, some miles, was quite an undertaking.
This is folklorist Sarah Bryan. You might remember her from our last episode about the murder of Pearl Bryan. She's talking about a tobacco farmer named Charlie Lawson from Stokes County, North Carolina. He took his family shopping and to see the photographer just before Christmas, 1929. That family photograph of the Lawsons has survived all these years.
They're looking fairly uncomfortable. It does not look like a happy outing, although they do have beautiful new clothes. They look like they're not entirely at ease with each other.
One person in the photograph stands out, the Lawson's oldest daughter, Marie. She was 16 at the time.
What's interesting about that picture is this, what looks to be, looking at this picture, it makes you think, thank God I'm not a farmer, and thank God I'm not doing this because it's a horrible, hard life. But Marie seems to have this light on her, like she has escaped this all for some reason. She looks beautiful and different than the rest.
She does. She looks like a flapper. She's quite pretty, has her hair bobbed and waved. She's wearing a necklace and a very nice 1920s style dress with a lacy collar, and the light falls more on her than on anybody in the family.
And she's attractive. She's
very attractive.
2 weeks later, on Christmas Day, 1929, the Lawson family got dressed in their new clothes. Fanny Lawson, the mother, baked a Christmas cake, and the oldest son, Arthur, went into town to buy shotgun shells.
I believe that he wanted to go rabbit hunting and didn't have shells himself. It's strange to think he must have asked his father, do you have any shells? And his dad must have said no.
Or I can't spare them.
Can't spare them, exactly.
By the time Arthur returned home, his entire family was dead, shot, and in many cases also beaten. Charlie Lawson murdered six of his children and his wife, starting with daughters, Carrie and Maybelle.
They were outside. He killed them and put their bodies in the barn, then went into his house, shot his wife Fanny and their little baby, shot Marie, who was the 16-year-old daughter, and killed the two little boys who were also in the house at the time.
And so when you look at this portrait that was taken with these new clothes, I mean, maybe the father snapped, but it seems like it was rather planned out. It has this odd quality. It's like a burial portrait.
It is. It's a very funereal-looking picture, and it makes you think of how they were laid out at the crime scene, which was very strange. He carefully took each body and placed it in a funerary posture. He put the baby in her crib, but each of the other victims he laid out with their hands crossed over their chest like a body in a coffin and put rocks under their heads for pillows. So when people came to the crime scene, the bodies were very carefully arranged.
So he had gone back after he'd killed everyone and kind of set them all up.
Yes, set them all up. I mean, strange to say, but it sounds like very lovingly, which, you know, of course, shows how deranged he was at the time that he would murder them and then do such a caring act as setting out the bodies the way he did.
And what happens to him?
He went into the woods after he finished killing his family and shot himself.
Many neighbors heard that last shot, and soon there was a huge crowd of people gathered on the Lawsons' tobacco farm as the police tried to figure out what had happened.
Family members started charging admission to their house, leading people on a tour of the crime scene. There were some people who were there years later remembered seeing 20 cars parked outside the house. People, just morbid curiosity, taking tours of the crime scene.
The crime scene tour cost 25 cents and was advertised in newspapers across the state. Everything in the house was left intact, even that Christmas cake that Fanny had made.
And I don't think that it had even been cut into yet. I don't think they'd eaten any. But it was sitting there in the house, you know, sort of a poignant reminder of this having been a family with children at Christmas. So the cake was left there, and it was a star attraction during the tours.
We'd planned today's story to be kind of a companion to our last episode, which was about the murder of Pearl Bryan and the strange way in which she became the subject of murder ballads. And yes, in both cases, a very bloody crime scene became a tourist attraction. In both cases, gruesome murders were set to string band music and became very popular. In 1930, the murder of the Lawson family by the Carolina Buddies was one of the most popular songs in the country.
His name was Charlie Lawson, and he had a loving wife, but we'll never know what caused him.
We actually went to Stokes County and ended up learning that the Lawson family murder is not exactly in the past for its residents. There are ghost stories, conspiracy theories, all kinds of gossip and superstition. And most of all, people are still trying to understand why Charlie Lawson did it.
Because it's so sad. It happened on Christmas, a whole family. And you just would, you know, I would just really like to know why. Just why?
This is Tanya Huey.
My mom used to sing to me the old story, and my aunt had been to the old home place. I think when she was a child, she went to the funeral.
So what we thought was going to be the crime story behind an old murder ballad turned out to be a little more interesting. This Lawson family murder has cast a very long shadow in Stokes County. And people here still love to tell the story to one another, over and over again. I'm Phoebe Judge. This is Criminal.
They all were buried in a crowded grave while the angels watched above. Come home, come home, my little ones, to a land of peace and love.
My father was very interested in this story all of his life. He was 8 years old when the murders happened. He remembered the day. His sisters toured the house, but his family, or his mother and father, deemed him too young to go see it when it was an active tourist attraction. So he was always upset that they wouldn't let him go. But his sisters came back telling about seeing the bloody pillows and everything.
This is Trudy Smith. Her father was obsessed with finding out what happened, and he wasn't the only one.
You know, it's intensely important to the people here that they just want to keep this story alive. And today I came to the conclusion, I think they love these people. They even forgive Charlie Lawson, but I think there's a love for all these characters and these people that were real and lived in their community.
Trudy Smith's father took it upon himself to track down people who'd known the Lawson family and ask questions.
He happened to be able to speak to a gentleman by the name of Hill Hampton. And Hill Hampton had been the murderer's best friend and really close neighbor. And Hill told him some things about the murders, about Charlie Lawson himself. And also, one of the things that we were puzzled about is Hill Hampton said, I know what was going on in the family, but I'm not going to talk about it.
When Trudy graduated from college, she agreed to help her father compile all of his research into a true crime book. In 1990, they self-published 2,500 copies of White Christmas, Bloody Christmas. Those sold out in 3 weeks. Then they had 5,000 more books printed. Gone. Then 5,000 more. Now you can't find a copy unless you're willing to spend a few hundred dollars on eBay. Or you can read it at one of the libraries in Stokes County. But you have to physically sit in the library to read it. You can't check it out because you can't be trusted not to steal it. Trudy Smith wrote a follow-up book, The Meaning of Our Tears. Even though that one's still in print, if you want to check it out from a library around here, you'll have to leave a $50 deposit.
I'm Sandra Tedderton, and we're in Madison, North Carolina at Madison Dry Goods.
Madison Dry Goods was our first stop in Stokes County. Back in 1929, the building housed a funeral parlor, and this is where the Lawsons were embalmed. Some people think the building is still inhabited by their ghosts.
One little girl, she was in here with her dad one day. It was probably a Saturday. They're standing there at the bottom of the steps, and she said, look, Dad, there's a girl up there in a white dress, a long white dress. And he looked up and he went, right. I said, she very well could have seen something. Now, I myself have never experienced anything. But there have been people in here who have come in and said, yeah, I kind of sensed something upstairs.
On the first floor, they have clothes, an old-fashioned candy, biscuit mix, a table with salted peanuts and bottles of Coke. On the second floor, there's a small museum, mostly about the town of Madison. And at the end of the hall, there's a very small dark room with something like a casket. Next to the casket is a little table with a flickering red light and a framed copy of that portrait of the family. Support for Criminal comes from Ritual. Ritual's Essential for Women is a multivitamin with an ingredients label you can trust. Ritual uses a delayed-release design in their capsules. That means your body absorbs what it needs when it needs it. That also makes it easy on your stomach, and you don't even need to take it with food. And while some vitamins smell terrible, Ritual puts a peppermint oil-infused tab in each bottle that keeps each bottle smelling fresh. Ritual's Essential for Women works to support your brain, bones, and red blood cells, and it's USP verified, meaning the ingredients label matches exactly what's inside, so you know what you're putting in your body. I've been taking Ritual every day for a few months now. My favorite things about it are that it doesn't smell or taste like other vitamins, and that it has omega-3 DHA and vitamin D3. Ritual's Essential for Women 18+ is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/criminal. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18+ to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/criminal for 25% off. Support for Criminal comes from Seed Health. I've been taking their probiotic, which is actually both a probiotic and a prebiotic, so they call it a symbiotic, every day for months now. Their DSO1 daily symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 small capsules a day. Developed in collaboration with a scientific board guided by the latest in probiotic research, Seed's daily supplement offers a slow but steady approach to restoring a healthy gut microbiome. No miracles required. Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/criminal and use code 25criminal to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/criminal. Code 25criminal. Sandra Tedderton said people come through all the time asking about the Lawsons. She has a copy of the photograph right behind the register so she can explain the story to anyone who might not know it. As she talked to us, another customer piped up and asked if the graves were still open to the public.
Where they're buried, there's a mass grave over there with the whole family. And I've heard different things. I've heard you have access to it, and I've heard whoever has the property now has cut off access to it. But they said if you would go, and you go in the fall when the leaves are falling, the leaves fall on everybody's grave but Charlie's. Or it snows on everybody's grave but Charlie's.
Well, you blame it?
But then people go, well, why did he not kill his son, too? And I had a lady come in one day who apparently...
This is what intrigued us. People around here still want to know what Charlie Lawson was thinking.
Why did he kill a three-month-old baby? You know? So I think it's just a lot of whys. I mean, everybody who would have known why is gone. So a lot of it may be speculation, like based on the lady who wrote the book. And all she's getting is from people that knew him. So I think that's what it is. Everybody's trying to solve the mystery.
And the mystery is top of mind this summer because the Stokes County Arts Center commissioned a play about the murder of the Lawson family. All of the shows completely sold out almost immediately. We were lucky to get a ticket.
When we first posted about auditions, people were posting resumes of gore makeup that they could do. I mean, lots of people. And that's not, you see no blood. Nothing like that.
This is director Justin Bulla.
I grew up in this county, so the story's been passed down from every family around the county to generation and generation. I think if you grow up in Stokes County, you know this story.
The script for the play is adapted from Trudy Smith's books and was performed at South Stokes High School, just a few miles from where the murders happened. There was popcorn for sale and a man in the lobby claiming to have the original portrait of the Lawsons.
Original?
That's the original picture taken 2 weeks before the shooting, 1929.
And how did you get it?
I got it from a family, a member of the family, yes. That stays at my house locked up in a safe.
The Arts Council asked us not to record any of the actual performance, but we can tell you that it's done with a Greek chorus. People from the town tell the story together, which feels appropriate.
My name is Perry Fry, and... my mama went to the funeral back in 1929. A little bit akin to the Lawsons, distantly related.
And a lot of people said they thought the play was well done, but it doesn't answer why, which is actually what everyone is wondering. And we can't know. But there are two dominant theories.
He, several months before the murder, sustained a serious head injury.
Again, folklorist Sarah Bryan.
He had been cutting a ditch on his property and hit himself in the back of the head with a mattock, which is like a pickaxe. Had a very bad head injury. And after that, he behaved erratically. He was volatile, sometimes violent, and was just not himself, people said. Now, after he died, his doctor, Chester Helsebeck, who was my cousin.
In real life?
In real life was my cousin. His doctor testified that the head injury would not have been enough to cause his behavior.
Lawson's brain was actually removed and shipped off to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore to be studied. And they said the same thing, that the injury didn't explain the behavior. As for the second theory.
He had gotten the oldest daughter pregnant, Marie. She was 16. This didn't come out until many, many years later when some researchers were writing about the case. And just as their book was going to press, a cousin of the Lawson family called up and said, there's something you ought to know.
These researchers were Trudy Smith and her father, who we heard from earlier. They also interviewed Marie Lawson's best friend, who said that Marie had told her that she was pregnant. By some accounts, Charlie Lawson had even told his wife, Fanny, what was going on.
And then there were two notes found in his pockets once they found him out in the woods after he killed himself. And one of them, both of them were incomplete. One of them said, troubles can cause. And the other one said, no one to blame but. And he didn't finish either of the notes, but they were found on his body.
One wonders if that was a reason to him to kill the family, if he felt that he had polluted the family with this, or if the alleged incest was actually part of his insanity after this injury. He was very strange and a very frightening man, it sounds like, after his head injury, and this may have been part of it.
It was on one Christmas morning, a snow was on the ground at home in North Carolina. The murderer was found. His name was Charlie Lawson. He had a loving wife. We'll never know what caused him to take his family's lives. They say he killed his wife at first, and the little ones did cry. Please, Father, won't you spare our lives? For we are too young to die. But the raging man could not be stopped. He would not heed their cause, and he kept on firing fatal shots until he killed them all. And when the dreadful news was heard, it was a great surprise. He killed six children and his wife, and then he closed their eyes. Farewell, kind friends and home. I'll see you all no more. Into my breast I fire a shot, and my troubles will be carry him to jail. No lawyers did he pay. He'll have his trial in another world on the final judgment day. They were buried in a crowded grave while the angels watched above. Come home, my little ones, to the land of peace and love. Thank you.
Thank you to Elephant Micah for collaborating with us this month. You can download their arrangements of The Murder of the Lawson Family or Pearl Bryan on iTunes or Bandcamp, or you can see them perform the ballads live. They're on tour in September. We've got information on our site, thisiscriminal.com. Criminal is produced by Lauren Sporer and me, with audio engineering help from Rob Byers. Julianne Alexander creates original illustrations for each episode of Criminal. She also designed brand new t-shirts and coffee mugs. You can check them out on our site. Just a quick note, we're excited to announce that we're planning 4 Criminal Live shows this fall. We'll start here in Durham, North Carolina, and then head west to Seattle, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Tickets are on sale now. We'd love to see you. Criminal is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collective of the 13 best podcasts around. Radiotopia is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, celebrating creativity, chaos, and teamwork. I'm Phoebe Dretch. This is Criminal.
Radiotopia.